It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet.
And welcome to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retreat Central, where we also can't believe that Kim and Kanye are set to divorce. I know, I was shocked too, but enough about that. Back to the wrestling, as the Ryans would say. Don't forget to check out the feature show. We had a really, really good one earlier this week where we said, "What's up?" and Kwaku rapped and sang "What's up" to R-Truth. Go and check that one out. Go check out the YouTube channel. Hundreds of content over there. Other shows include Saturday Draft Live with those bozos over there. East Meets West with that lunatic Grant McRobbie, who is a lunatic. A lunatic. All right, I just want to clarify that. All right, first and foremost here on this show. And go and check us out on social media. We like to hear from you. All right, we like to hear what your opinion is. It's all right us saying and speaking into the void, but tell us what you think. Get to us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We'd love to hear from each and every single one of you. Now, I'm not going to bury the lead here. She's back. She's back with a bang, and she's coming for you. It's been a wee minute, but the Bath Bomb Princess has finally returned to the ESSR airwaves. Sarah, how are you doing?
I am doing very, very well today. I'm glad to be back.
Yeah. I'm happy to have you back. How was your holiday season? How was it? All good?
I mean, I was stuck doing uni work. So yeah. It was stressful, but the work for psychology has definitely paid off. I've passed psychology and hopefully my film and media and sociology stuff back soon.
Yeah, I think that, you know, work in psychology is required for dealing with the amount of lunatics on this podcast, particularly Grant McRobbie, as I've said. But then we go on to the man who, you know, Stephen Wilson put out a nice tweet. In these hard times, he's trying to make people smile, and he did that with his intro on the R-Truth show, which is why I didn't even try and compete here. I was just like, I'm just going to do nice plain intros because we've had all the crazy we need this week. Kwaku, how you doing?
I'm not bad. How you doing?
Hey, I'm all right. Thank you very much for asking. I'm looking forward to it.
I think you've got some sick rhymes underneath your cravat.
My name is the GOAT, and I'm the man. I can't wait to beat Grant. Okay, moving on. So the first piece of news we're going to talk about today is my favourite topic and yours. It is Japanese wrestling. New Japan Pro Wrestling recently had a huge weekend, I've been led to believe. They had Wrestle Kingdom and New Year's Dash. Before I butcher anything, before I get banned from talking in this podcast ever again by Stephen Wilson, I'm going to hand you over to Sarah Grieve, who legitimately knows what she's talking about when it comes to this. So Sarah, over to you. What happened in New Japan over this weekend?
I mean, it's the start of the year where, like, New Japan have been putting on the big shows and everything, but they only have the one big granddaddy of the year, which last year they split into two nights, and they continued it this year with Wrestle Kingdom 15. So there was a whole bunch of stuff that was going on. I mean, you had a tag team title tournament that came from the winners of Tag League in the Gorillas of Destiny.
I like them.
Do you know who the Gorillas of Destiny are? Yeah.
Tama Tonga. Yeah, Tama Tonga
and Tagaloa. And they were taking on Dangerous Techers in the team of Taichi and Zack Sabre Jr. with Doki at ringside. So like that was a good match as well for the tag team titles, which obviously I won't diverge too much into it just because East meets West will go further into it. Whether or not they invite me to actually talk about it, it's another story. So yeah, that ended up with the Gorillas of Destiny. Once again, IWGP tag team champions. But
they may put you in the pre-show like the Stardom match.
I mean, with all fairness, Stardom are the only women's promotion in Japan, and they do have, like, they're the sister promotion of New Japan.
I was just being, I can't pronounce their term, but I was just saying, facetious. David, you'll tell me what it is.
It was a great attempt, crack you.
I rap badly, not say big words.
But yeah, no, the actual show kicked off itself at 7 o'clock in the morning for us, which is not the worst time to sit and watch a wrestling show. I mean, I asked Daniel, would you prefer to wake up at 7 to watch a show or stay up till 5 o'clock in the morning? And we both agreed getting up at 7 is probably a better thing to do, because then at least you can go back to bed if you wanted, or you're up for the day. Yeah. But last year, Kazuchi Okada went and put forward a sort of tournament of some sort with various stipulations called the King of Pro Wrestling. So the provisional champion that finished off 2020 was Toru Yano, who's one of my favourites because he's really, really funny. They had a 21-man Royal Rumble match. It's called the New Japan Rumble match, which it would determine who was going to challenge for the provisional trophy, because you don't actually become champion until the very end of the year. So you're just the provisional King of Pro Wrestling up until that very final match. So it was a 21-man sort of Royal Rumble style match, but you can lose by pinfall, submission, disqualification, count out, or getting thrown over the top rope. So, and then the last four men were going to advance to a fatal four-way match that were going to be happening on night two. So like some of the names that you had part of that was like, you had like Bad Luck Fale, you had Chase Owens from Bullet Club starting off. You had the Young Lions, who we had Tsuji, Gabe Kidd, and unfortunately I can't remember the last Young Lion. They have been mainly working at all the Japan shows throughout lockdown, which I think they fully deserve that spot, just to sort of come in. But basically it ended up with three of the men that were in the match actually competed, and one man managed to win the match in advance without even entering the ring, which was Chase Owens, who came in at number one, Balak Fale, Bushi of LIJ, and then Toru Yano. So last year's King of Pro Wrestling entered at number 21, and he never got a chance to get into the ring before there were four of them left. So I mean, who can imagine that Toru Yano is going to win a match without even entering? It's a record.
Very good. I think that's effectiveness right there. You know, he's not expending energy he doesn't need to use. It's brilliant.
Oh, exactly. And if you ever watch a Toru Yano match, like, gear him for a treat every single time. Yeah, it's so unpredictable.
Nice.
But the actual match that opened up the show, which is one of my personal favourites, is the junior heavyweights. So we had Hiromu Takahashi, who is the all-time favourite of mine. He's very flamboyant, he's very crazy, likes to wear a lot of colours. He's got like two cats called Daryl and Carol, which he's actually got a supersize of Daryl now, and I'm really wanting it. It's like 700 quid to get it from Japan, and I'm wanting it. But he was taking on the Super J Cup winner in El Fantasmo of Bullet Club. So this was determined who was going to face the junior heavyweight champion in Ishimori of Bullet Club, who is El Fantasmo's tag team partner, because Hiromu wanted to determine that he was the best super junior out there. He was the current best of super juniors from this year, and he was also the one to pin Jushin Thunder Liger last year in the Dome in his retirement match. So this is a really, really big night. Really good back and forward singles thing. It was crazy, as you can expect the junior heavyweight championship match to be. But Hiromu did manage to get the win, and he would be going on to night two to face Ishimori. it was for only being like a 17-minute match, still you could sit and watch it forever. There was flips, there was craziness, there was shenanigans as well. Like, not general Bullet Club shenanigans, but definitely shenanigans. more El Fantasmo. But he actually debuted his new music as well in El Fantasmo, because he had been recently coming out to no music, being very heel-like, as he usually was. But it was friend of the show, David Grimerson, who has made his new music as well. So it was a big shout out. It was really, really good music to hear. Really, really fit the character as well. So that was a good one. The next one, so we had Kenta, who was going to be facing
Kenta
with all the capitals. He was essentially, it was like the G1, but for the United States Championship match opportunity. Just because at the moment, there were some people stuck in America, the LA Dojo. There were some people still stuck in Japan. Yeah. Kenta, at this point, was actually in America when this took place, as well as New Japan Strong, which is on NJWP World. You could actually go and view it. It's just our American one. I think it's every Tuesday, and it's the people from the LA Dojo, primarily, as well as, like, they had their Super J Cup not too long ago as well, which featured people from Impact in Chris Bay, and you had Leo Rush, which I was hoping Chris Bay was going to make it to the final. He did not. I was very sad.
David sitting there wondering, when is Santana coming out with the guitar to play a riff? and I just want to eat some ciabatta.
So Kenta with all the capitals, he is currently the holder of the number one contendership to the US Championship, which is held by John Moxley at the moment. But obviously he's not been allowed to get into the country to defend it, and unlike last time when there was a tornado and he couldn't get into Japan, they haven't taken the title off him this time. So Kenta has been continuously having to defend his number one contendership, right, which he's not happy about, and he's onto his second briefcase because Hiroshi Takahashi broke the first one. Kenta hit him over the head with it, so it was really Kenta's fault. But he was taking on
his head shouldn't be where he was swinging the briefcase. I mean it's like that.
You don't say that about the ace.
It's that ace.
It sounds like Kenta's the victim here. Aye. Although if someone's the ace of New Japan as the ace of USSR, I feel we should have a kinship, so maybe I do feel sorry for them.
It's like that prank you would do where you put a bucket of water on somebody's door so that they open it and the bucket falls on them.
Then, you shouldn't have been there.
No, it's more the thing of, why did you put a bucket on the top of my door? It's like, why is your door underneath my bucket?
So Kenta won.
Yeah, well, Kenta was defending his number one contendership, right, as we call the New Japan Granddad, against Kojima, and he had Tenzan at his side at ringside. We call him the New Japan Granddad, so sort of a little bit older and a little bit more full of respect. But Kenta managed to hold on to his number one contendership, right? But we did have a promo from John Moxley just before this match happened, which was quite surprising, calling himself the Boogeyman. So hopefully we will get the Kenta John Moxley match that we've all been hoping for.
Nice.
And then the next time that we had a match, it was after Will Ospreay had split from Chaos and created his own empire, as he likes to call it, with the Great Okan, as well as Jeff Cobb and himself with Bea Priestley. They had been sort of bullying the ace of New Japan in Hiroshi Tanahashi. So, and this took place as well all over Tag League. It was building up. So Tanahashi had his match against the Great Okan, which Hiroshi Tanahashi being the ace, he did manage to defeat him. So that was like the first loss for this new faction that had been made. And then the next one was the match between Okada and Will Ospreay with Bea Priestley at ringside. This had obviously been culminating since well before Tag League and everything, I think since like the G1. Yeah. It happened at the G1, in which Okada managed to, he beat Will Ospreay by using the Rainmaker. I think he might have forgotten how to use the Rainmaker. in the meantime, because he had always been doing his finisher with the money clip. So that was like the second loss, which you can see was not, it's not a great night for the Empire, really.
No, not a good night to be the Empire at this point, you have to say.
Not a good one. And then the next match that he had was the main event. So this was like the first half of the second double gold, as we would call it. Because Kota Ibushi was obviously a back-to-back G1 winner, he did have the right to challenge Tetsuya Naito for the double championship. But Jay White obviously had technically beaten Kota Ibushi in the tournament and therefore had the right to challenge for that title or for that briefcase opportunity. So this is why you had two main events. But you had Kota Ibushi was the one to actually beat Tetsuya Naito for the Intercontinental and the Heavyweight Championship, which it was a half hour match, and it was a solid match. Like very, very scary to watch as well. As we all know, Kota Ibushi likes to land on his neck.
Yeah.
So, and his
neck is made of steel. I've seen some of the videos on Twitter. There's one where he takes a dive outside the ring, and he must have a neck that's made of rubber, you know, at this point, to be able to survive some of the dives he's making on. It's insane.
Yeah, no, he does like to fall on his neck and fall on his head, but this man likes to believe that there's 25 hours in a day and that he doesn't read because he doesn't trust books. Like, see the inner workings of Kota Ibushi? Grant can tell you. I can tell you. There's even loads and loads of Reddit blogs and everything and posts about Kota Ibushi that you'd be like, how is he even human? But this is sort of playing into him believing that he is God.
So, I mean, I'll trust you on that. You know my opinions on Grant, but I'll trust you on that.
You know? I mean, yeah, because like I said, you quoted Bush's credentials the other day, David.
You can see that,
apart from the US Championship and the never open weight tag belts, Kota Ibushi's pretty much won every single thing in New Japan.
Yeah.
So, and this
good
is
for him.
Exactly. He had never actually won the big title. This is the second reign as Intercontinental Champion. So
nice.
And at the moment, that was him moving on to night two. So night two, we did have like a couple of Stardom matches which were on the pre-show. I didn't watch the pre-show at this point because I was still asleep. So,
so the main show.
Even though the show started an hour later, I fell asleep because we had been up to like midnight playing games and I was knackered. So, so night two began with the Fatal 4-Way match from that had happened the night before for the Provisional King of Pro Wrestling 2021 trophy. And Toru Yano managed to hold on to his trophy just now. So at the moment, he is the Provisional King of Pro Wrestling. We'll need to see where that takes him and who challenges and who tries to compete over the next year, because with the King of Pro Wrestling, each competitor gets to pick a stipulation and then that kind of gets voted on by the fans of New Japan.
Nice.
So it could be anything. Like we've had I think there was like no pinfalls, or it was like first to take off the last corner pad, which is a Toru Yano favourite, because he could take off a corner pad in less than a couple of seconds. Like it does not take him long to take a corner pad off. So that is a good one, because again, Yano's my favourite and he managed to pin Chase Owens, which is always a good thing because I can't stand Owens. Nice.
Oh, Owens, what a horrible human being. You know, scuffy looking there, forever. I can't stand him.
The next match we had, it was Suzuki Gun with Kanemaru and El Desperado defending their IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championships. It was against Taguchi and Master Wato with Tenzan at ringside. And obviously Master Wato has been a good match since making his debut.
David's like, thank God I didn't need to pronounce that name.
Well, Master Wato. Master Wato, yeah.
It's Master Wato. It's
David,
the grandmaster.
Please stop. You really want that visa? Just stop.
Okay.
But again, good solid match. It was a very, very good one for Master Wato to be in, because he only came at the G1, so it was the G1 or the New Japan Cup. It was one of the two. So again, really, really solid match with a junior, and with an elder in a way, sort of give him that more experience. So he'll be, Master Watto will be one to watch in the upcoming year.
For sure. Mm-hmm. One to pronounce as well.
An easy one to pronounce. So the next one was the final match with Empire that was taking place on night two. Former never open weight champion Jeff Cobb had actually challenged Shingo Takagi of LIJ, which the fun thing is that usually up until about a year ago, the never open weight championship, you can never defend it successfully. It always changed hands.
Yeah.
Until it came with Shingo and it was actually Suzuki that managed to successfully defend it. So, but Shingo managed to hold on. The Dragon of LIJ held on to the championship. So over the 2 days, Empire did not have a good time at Wrestle Kingdom.
0-3.
Yep. Especially for a new faction, it's not a good sign.
So these guys are the retribution of New Japan.
I mean, they might be. I mean, it's still very, very early days. Having Master Watto, the Great Okan there, it made sense because he did his excursion in Rev Pro.
Yeah.
With Jeff Cobb, I'm still not too sure why he's been there, but he's the muscle man. I'm actually not sure why he's part of Empire. Like, it doesn't fully make sense to me. So, like, that was even my thing. I was like, why are you doing this? Because he had a great G1, but he was still very, very popular amongst the fans, so to turn quite suddenly was quite upsetting for me. And then we move on to, like, the third to last match we had was coming all the way from the New Japan Cup, from where it all kicked off, and it's your favourite, David Sanada versus Evil with all the capitals.
Yes!
He's here.
How long did you have that lined up for?
Oh, for the whole show.
I told you he was waiting for that guitar riff. I told you. I told you he was waiting.
So, yes, who did he meet?
So, Sanada defeated Evil with all the capital letters.
Evil!
All the capital letters, but yes, your boy Sanada did beat him.
Yes.
And he looked really good in that match. It does come back all the way from the Super J Cup, when we all knew that Evil was turning a little bit more evil. But the storytelling throughout that match...
God, what an evil...
He went all the evil.
Not
the
Diet Coke of evil.
Not the Diet Coke of evil. He was the Diet Coke of evil. Now he is evil.
Yes, he went from Stewie Griffin evil to, you know, Bond villain evil at this point.
Proper, yes. But it was a really good match. Both of them looked really good. Sanada, like, you couldn't really push this guy much further to the sky unless you actually put, like, the heavyweight belt on him. But the storytelling of them obviously being the tag team from LIJ before Evil left to go to Bullet Club.
Yeah.
So that it was really, really good. And then, like, the second to last match, or as they call it, the semi-final, where you had the junior heavyweight belt, Hiromu Takahashi and Taishi Ishimori, which you can't go wrong with this kind of match, especially if you do love junior heavyweight matches like I do.
Nice.
Very, very flippy, very, very, lots of punches and everything, because these guys have been fighting on and off for that heavyweight belt since Hiromu won it at the last Wrestle Kingdom against Will Ospreay, because it's literally jumped between these two men over the course of last year. So, but my boy Hiromu came through and beat Ishimori to regain his junior heavyweight championship belt, which I'm very happy about.
Nice.
And then the final match, the actual final match of the night, Kota Ibushi taking on Jay White, accompanied by Gedo. Now, you have to know that this match, longest match in Dome history, right? It's a match that's never gone longer until, obviously, the other night of 48 minutes and 5 seconds. It was getting on, and it was a very, very scary match to watch, especially knowing that it was getting close to the end. And there was times that you couldn't quite believe it. Again, Ibushi falling on his neck or Jay doing something stripping and you're like, oh my God. I don't know if either of you two have actually had a chance to watch the match. But it was...
Apart from 50 times I've already seen it.
Is that just because you'd love Kota Ibushi?
No, I just love Japanese wrestling as a whole, you know what I mean?
At least all these people that I've managed to say, it's not been hard to announce the names, but...
That's true.
Kota Ibushi stayed as God. He managed to beat Jay White. And at the very, very end of the night, just before Ibushi did say his goodbyes, for that night, thanking the crowd, you had Sanada come out to ringside. And I could see your expression, David. Ooh. But yeah, Sanada came out and said that, we have battled before and I highly respect you, which is why I want to come out and formally challenge you at some point. I want to fight you again this coming year.
Yes.
So somewhere down the line, we will get a Kota Ibushi Sanada match, hopefully for the double titles at some point.
I think Rob Thomas will have a part to play in that one. You know, he'll be somewhere around the ringside there.
Oh yeah. And then with New Year's Dash, it was quite simple. It's not like the fun stuff that we've had in the past, like Kenny kicking AJ out of the Bullet Club. Like, this is why people expect.
Yeah.
A lot of things to happen, but the main thing, which it'll probably be talked about again on East Meets West, or you'll probably have it as a thing on the conspiracy theory, like I mentioned to you earlier on today, David, that usually contracts in New Japan run from January to January. Mm-hmm. And Jay White did point out, he's like, I am contractually obligated to wrestle at New Year's Dash, which is the sort of night after Mania, as we would call it, but it's like it's the new year show. And Jay White did wrestle, but then he did say that he's going home. There's no way he'll be back, if he'll be back. So we don't know if that's part of Jay's character, because he's, you know, that's just Jay for you. He might just be a dick like that. He might go back to New Zealand. Who knows? But we know that WWE have had a severe interest in him for quite a long time, so there is a possibility that he might be an entrant in the Rumble. Mm. Who knows?
It would be interesting if that happened in the conspiracy theory, because I said I think he was staying in New Japan a bit longer, and I predicted to be NXT champion by the end of 2021. Now, not too sure where that's going to happen or if that'll fall there now, but I'd be interested in seeing. I've heard really good things about him, so I'd be interested in seeing him in WWE.
I mean, he was 28 and headlining the Tokyo Dome. And like last year, he was semi-final of the Tokyo Dome as well, which he's technically leader of Bullet Club right now as well. So at the age of 28, the boy can only really go up. I mean, his Switchblade character is amazing. It's, you know, excuse the pun, but it's phenomenal.
Yeah, if you're going to have Balor lose the NXT title, just speculating, he could go back to Raw. AJ's on Raw. Your man comes to Raw. There's a stable for you right there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, they did try with Bullet Club before, and they got it all wrong, just because of the whole rights and everything and whatnot. So, but it'll be interesting to see. There was some more challenges made. Like Ishimori and El Fantasma are going to be challenging for the Junior Tag Championships. And a few other things. Not too sure where Empire's going to be going, but at the moment it looks like Japan's going to go into another state of emergency, so we don't know if there's going to be any more matches for the time being. So we just, even the English commentators and Kevin Kelly, etc., they had no idea if it was even going to be happening. Even Rocky Romero wasn't on commentary, because I think he was meant to be wrestling, I think, on the show, but he might have been going back to America, just because he did fly in for the Rumble and to do the commentary, but he's primarily focusing on New Japan Strong right now, so I think that's probably where he's went. But other than that, Wrestle Kingdom was amazing.
Well, thank you, Sarah, for taking the lead with our Japanese portion of the show. Like you said there, if you want to hear more, don't forget to check out East Meets West. They'll be doing a deep dive into everything that's went down. They'll have a lot to say as well. But thank you very much for taking the lead there, Sarah. Quack, I'm going to come to you from probably the best wrestling on the planet to some wet-ass pussy, because we are talking about Cardi B. Cardi B has been all over.
What a fucking segue. Oh my god.
Smooth transitions.
So I don't know if you've seen this on Raw, Quacker, but you know, Tony Wilson.
Not the wet ass pussy.
There was no wet ass pussy on Raw.
No, but just some wet ass worms.
Yes, there were wet ass worms, because Hall of Famer Tony Wilson, I think she should have her Hall of Fame status revoked, because she lied to Angel Garza. She liked him. She said, look, Cardi B's in that room over there. You want to give anyone a rose, you go and give her a rose. It wasn't Cardi B. It was the Boogeyman.
See, the thing is, though, Boogeyman starts with B, so it could be Cardi Boogeyman. And she just, he just went away and didn't let her finish her sentence. So clearly, she was going to say Cardi Boogeyman, but he just jumped the gun.
Deception, Kwaku, that's all it is, deception. But it led to some Twitter interactions that were very interesting. Cardi was at first very confused as to why she was getting tweeted about wrestling. She then named some of her favourite wrestlers. Trish Stratus was on the list. She responded to it, to which Cardi was very excited. And then Melina responded, because she was on the list. And then Cardi said, oh my god, I remember you with those two guys you used to be with. So, bad day to be John Morrison and Joey Mercury, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But then we seen her take very real issue with Lacey Evans. Apparently didn't know that Lacey Evans was playing kayfabe. But then when she finally seen the clip, she said, Vince, I'm coming for you. Like, your days are numbered. She's fuming. It's led to rampant speculation that WWE are going to get the money out to get Cardi B at Mania. Wally said to the same to her, calling out on Twitter, is Cardi B a celebrity appearance that you would actually be happy to see in WWE, Quacker?
Personally, I couldn't give a shit. But however, you can't deny that she is one of the most popular women and artists out there, and just one of the proper A-list people out there, that it would draw in so many eyes into the product right now. And let's be honest, Raw is really in the pits right now. It really is in the pits, that it needs something like this, not like a Rob Gronkowski that will just annoy the hell out of you. Like, you knew that was going to be annoying, and right enough, it was annoying. But he went away, did this thing, and he went back to NHL. I almost said the NFL, but
it is the NFL. You're getting it right.
There goes my American visa.
I think, but you're thinking of Wayne Gretzky there.
They have too many NLs anyway, he plays that mad sport. So anyway, Cardi B, yes, I mean, she's one of the most popular artists out there right now. Her YouTube videos and music videos are getting like billions of views and stuff, so it will always help the product, absolutely. Just from a wrestling fan point of view, please make it actually worthwhile, like not just like some. I like her passion so much. I know she's passionate in the wrong way, but you can't help but deny that she's got a lot of passion, and in wrestling, that's all you need, really. So
yeah, I think
in the
so.
Right way and make it happen. But I just don't know how, with WWE the way they're going about family orientated, I don't know how you're gonna incorporate somebody like Cardi B, who, as you said, has a song called Wet Ass Pussy without actually saying the phrase. And let's be honest, the music video is as good as porn. So
why don't we just get Biffy Clyro in? They can do their cover instead. But Sarah, a question for you here is, I know where what opinion I have. Do you think she'll come in if they get her just as their sort of special musical act? Or could you see her getting into a program, and would you like to see her getting into a program come Mania?
I mean, if Snooki can do it, I think anybody can. So, I mean, we all remember like that whole thing with Snooki. But then again, like, she was a gymnast, so
yeah,
I'll let her off. I would say, like, see if for a musical act, probably. I mean, I did see her expressing interest in Carmella as well. So you never know, she might accompany Carmella to the ring at some point, just especially like see with Carmella's character on SmackDown.
Oh, that's perfect, actually.
Yeah. So yeah, looking at that, that would be a good fit. I would agree with Quacker saying, like, from a wrestling fan point of view, I'm like, I can't be bothered with it. But you always need that mainstream stuff. Like, you can never go wrong, especially when it comes to Mania. It is meant to be your big show. I know that it's probably not going to have fans. It might have fans. You never know, but it's not going to be on the big scale that WrestleMania usually is.
Yeah.
But as well, the fact that the theme is all about Hollywood, it wouldn't surprise me.
Exactly. And this is a thing, like, us as wrestling fans, if you're a wrestling fan listening to this or whatever, you may need to, like, take a wee step back and say, I may have my views or whatever have you, but is this aimed at me? And I can honestly say, this isn't aimed at me as a wrestling fan. Maybe it's aimed at me as a hip-hop fan or whatever, getting these opportunities. But if you're going in this solely as a wrestling fan, going with the Jim Cornette school of everything is shit in wrestling, then take a step back and go, I don't know if this is for me. But have a view, yes, but just don't crap on the product and just think that everyone's going to hate it. That's all I think.
I think that's the point, is that you brought it up. She's one of the most popular stars on the planet. And it's not like she's got no acting experience as well. If anyone's seen Hustlers, the movie with J-Lo, it was a really, really good movie. She had a part in that and she was perfectly serviceable. So we know she has some acting skills. I think if there's any celebrity come in, you know, who could do something, I'd say Cardi B, you know, is one. And I think the importance is that she has a wrestling fan. Yeah. You know, she's made that very clear that she used to watch it. She has her favourites. She's able to list them. She's getting excited when the likes of Trish are responding to her on Twitter. So I think it's about that enthusiasm. I'll be watching this one, you know, and if anyone doesn't want to be cool about it, you know what happens to people who don't want to be cool? We spit in the face of people who don't want to be cool. And that's what we thought was going to happen this Monday on Raw. You know, we thought we were going to get Carlito back. Carlito was advertised for Raw Legends Night. Wasn't there. It was then reported there was travel issues. However, then it turns out there were no travel issues whatsoever. WWE just jumped the gun. No one actually reached out to Carlito to come onto the show. Carlito was never booked for Raw Legends Night, which is absurd. Absolutely absurd. Sarah, what do you think about that? And how can a company... Does this just encapsulate... We're going to get into a deeper review later on in Raw Legends Night, what we thought about it. But does this not just sum up the current state of WWE?
What an actual joke! Oh my god! I mean, yeah, if you're going to... I don't even know how to describe that. But it's like, if you advertise someone, you would at least hope that, you know, it's confirmed. Because you're just going to look like an idiot. You're the biggest wrestling promotion in the world. Yeah. You're one of the highlights of... like TV right now, because you're actually producing like live things, and you can't do something simple like reaching out to a former champion in Carlito, and like everyone's getting buzzing for it. Like, even I was buzzing for it, and I've not watched WWE in months. And then when I see that Carlito wasn't there, I was like, well, that's got it fucked it, hasn't it? They fucked it. Seriously, they fucked it.
I think so. Quacko, do you agree? What do you think this is about? Because we've heard about the state of the booking in WWE, how last minute everything is, how many moving parts are going on. Do you think that, is there a need for a restructure in terms of their creative planning over there? Has something went horribly wrong?
Big time. I mean, when you're... Like, you just have to listen to the back catalogue of Talk is Jericho. And yeah, I know there's quite a few disgruntled people that leave, but the most poignant one was when Miro was talking about people were chanting Rusev Day, Rusev Day, and he was saying that Vince was saying, oh no, they're just saying that to rip on you. And they kept on saying Rusev Day to Shane McMahon, and he actually said duly noted, and it wasn't noted because they did nothing with it. So
yeah,
it's just when you hear things like that, you're just a bit like, just capital, just do some, like, these people are obviously chanting for something, and they, you always have a wrestling where when people are chanting, you kind of stop and you take it in, unless it's like the CM Punk chants, which is just bye-bye kind of thing.
Yeah.
But this Carlito thing, he got announced. I mean, surely some Carlito or something with this, it's put on. I don't know. Maybe actually, you know, he wouldn't, because you wouldn't want to burn your bridge if your agent is negotiating something for you.
But that's the thing. It looks like Carlito wasn't necessarily against it either. Like, Carlito sort of acknowledged the situation, sort of shrugging it off. Like,
he must be sitting in his lounge chair with an apple and a phone in his hand, and an Apple phone, funnily enough. Sorry, that was a bad joke. And just
a terrible joke.
I know.
A terrible joke, linked to a terrible joke that we'll be discussing later on.
He probably just took a bite out of his phone and said, that's not cool. It's probably why he does a bite out the Apple logo, because of Carlito.
But yes, Raw Legends is something we'll be getting into a bit deeper.
Oh,
you
please.
Know, as we go further into the show, but I wanted to bring that up there as its own news story. Sarah, back to you. Impact are bringing back the women's tag team titles over there. It's something they were really a trendsetter in that company back in day. You know, remember, you know, the women's tag team title back then. I remember, who was it that Kong won the titles with? It was it Aisha Saeed or something like that back in day.
I couldn't really tell you. Like, I only started really watching Impact properly in the past like year or so, but I had actually seen it like on and off. So the whole thing with the fact, like, me and Emily Hayden were talking about this in one of our, like, our first and only interview that we have. It's on our back catalogue.
Go check it out.
I know. Because we were talking about how the fact that the knockouts were very ahead of their time at TNA, because the first like women's tag team championships were introduced in 2009, and they went on for 4 years before they were obviously like retired and put to bed in 2013. It was announced September last year that they were going to be bringing back the Knockouts Tag Team Championships, because the Knockouts over at Impact are amazing. The actual division itself is something that I really love to see, because despite like maybe a couple of weird storylines like Wrestle House, which I'm not going to get into Wrestle House because I still don't understand Wrestle House, and the shooting of Johnny Bravo and all this sort of stuff, right? That was the fun things. It was to
the
do
death
with
Rose of Valley was marvelous.
I can't get into all that again. It's still going on. I'm still confused over it all. So what had happened? So those were deactivated in 2013 originally, because ODB and Young were stripped of the titles, and this is because, you know, Eric Young was a male holding the Knockouts Tag Team Championship, only male to do so. But yeah, it resulted in the fact that they just became deactivated, which it was a shame, because like you had like the beautiful people being like the biggest Knockouts Tag Team Champions that you could, like, when you think of Knockouts, the TNA Knockouts, you think the beautiful people like all the time. Like that's who I would go to. So when Madison Rayne had announced that they were going to be returning, like, Madison Rayne is a former Knockouts Tag Team Champion, it's really fun to see, because they only did have the one championship, which Deonna Purrazzo has been dominating that Knockouts division since she actually appeared just before Slammiversary, and then took the title from Jordynne Grace. So what they did is they decided to just hold a championship tournament, which obviously we all love. We all love a tournament. I love a tournament.
we all
love a tournament. And the fact that the titles were going to be revived at Hard to Kill. So what it was, like, I can't even remember the full-on like the actual brackets and everything. I knew that like Deanna Perez from Kimberly were a team.
Got eliminated first round against my favourite team of Taya Valkyrie and Rosemary. I love those two.
Well, see, Taya Valkyrie and Rosemary are a strange team, especially to come out of Wrestle House. Very strange, but I do love them together, especially, you know, Rosemary's unpredictable side to her.
Yeah.
But you had, like, the team, you had Havoc and Nevaeh, Jessica Havoc, known to others. You had Jordynne Grace had actually recruited Jazz to be her tag team partner, knowing that Jazz was going to be retiring, which that was really fun to see all these different matches. You also had formerly known as Emma, Tennille Dashwood and Alicia Edwards were teaming together, but I think they were knocked out in the first round by Jordynne Grace.
It was Havoc and Nevaeh.
And you had the Sea Stars team as well, which I was not familiar with Sea Stars. Still not. But the other, like the team to sort of stand out for me was Kiera Hogan and Tasha Steelz. Like, I love them two together. They're both young. They're both very, very similar in personalities. So it finally happened on last night's Impact that Havoc and Nevaeh, another proper tag team, we're going to be facing Kiera Hogan and Tasha Steelz, and this will be at the Hard to Kill pay-per-view at the end of the month, so I'm really looking forward to it. But one other thing to come out from it was that this Saturday night at Genesis, it's like an Impact special. You're going to have Jazz taking on Jordynne Grace,
just
in a one-to-one match, which I'm very excited for.
Excellent.
Yep.
And, you know, I promised you in the chat, Sarah, that I wouldn't take this as an opportunity to have a shot at the AEW Women's Division. But sometimes I just can't help myself. And I do think if you're going to have a women's tag team tournament, they should have a prize that they're actually getting at the end of it, and you can establish a women's tag team division. That to me sounds like a very sensible thing that Impact Wrestling have done. I don't know if anyone else has any thoughts on that. Maybe AEW should have done the same thing, you know?
Well, first
I completely agree.
Single women's division before they can get
Diamante and who else was it? Shit.
Exactly.
Ibelisse. Our name escaped me for a second. But Diamante and Ibelisse, they got what? Medals?
Yeah.
They got a couple of medals.
Medals. Like, they've just won the 100 metre sprint in their primary school. Like, honest to goodness. Like, Kwaku, you're right. And I think this is, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Impact Wrestling, for being the smallest of the big American promotions behind AEW, behind WWE, they have a disproportionately strong women's division. They shouldn't have been able to accumulate the talent that they've got in that division like they do now. Like, it's insane. It's unbelievable. And the fact that AEW haven't been able to replicate that success, they haven't been able to give the women the equal airtime, make them stars, give them that opportunity. WWE haven't been able to do it with their tag team division. You know, the tag team title has just become a prop for singles feuds at the best of times there, and in the worst of times they're on a proper tag team and you don't see them on TV, a la Billy Kay and Peyton Royce, the Australian duo otherwise known as the Iconics.
Iconics.
But I'm not going to get into that before my heart rate goes too high. But I commend the work that Impact Wrestling has done. I think in terms of, if you look at, we have looked at the history of that company in our back catalogue, go and check that out. You look at the history of that company, they're not one to do history making. They're not one to make progress for the sake of progress. They make it and they make it happen and it matters. You know, and that's why their women's division has such a storied history. I'm very excited about this tournament. Sarah, who do you think is going to win the titles in the end up?
See, this is a hard one. I would like to see Tasha Steelz and Kiera Hogan win it. I would really like to see. I think like they're really funny and can be quite adventurous with it, especially with how charismatic they two are. Nothing against Havoc and Nevaeh. I love them.
Yeah.
But when it comes to like being charismatic and what they can do, probably Tasha Steelz and Kiera Hogan.
Nice. Nice. I'll go Havoc and Avea.
Okay. We'll see what happens at the end of the month.
If you look at the first tournament, it was Sarita and Taylor Wilder, babyface team, who took the titles, and then it was Kong and Raisa Shahid who took them off them, like, basically straight after that. You know, so could be a similar situation here. But we'll see how it goes. And it was the beautiful people that they beat in that original final, Madison Rain and Velvet Sky, you know. So yeah. All goes to show you, you know. Build a women's division right and they will come. But we are gonna get into the week that was in wrestling, and Kwaku, I'm gonna come to you to start off with this one. The passing of John Huber, also known as Brody Liam Carper, to many fans around the world was a heartbreaking one, not only because, you know, he leaves behind a loving family, not only because of the stories that we've heard about how great a guy this guy was backstage and to his colleagues and to his peers, how supportive he was, but also because he leaves us with this sense of untapped potential. You know, we'd seen what he was doing as the Mr. Brody Lee character, and the sky was the limit. He'd always said it for this guy. The talent was there. I loved Luke Harper and WWE. I remember going to the Hydros, you know, house show, and it was the Wyatt family were in the main event against Ambrose and Jericho. And Harper, man, did you see him in person? It was great. The movement. You don't realise how agile he is, I think, until you see him in person. And it's something I'll miss not getting the opportunity to see that again. But AEW Dynamite did their tribute to John Huber this week, started off with a 10-bell salute, very appropriate. And Kwaku, the first really big moment of the night came in the match between the Inner Circle, so it was MJF, Santana, I won't play the music now because it's a more serious moment, and Ortiz. They were taking on Hangman Adam Page, John Silver and Alex Reynolds, and you know, a save was needed at one point and who should come out, but he was meant to be called Eric Redbeard. Apparently Chris Jericho didn't get the memo and just started shouting Eric Rowan, Redbeard, only from beside him trying to connect it over and over again. But that was a really good, you know, emotional first moment of the night to see his old tag team partner coming out there.
Absolutely. And what I liked throughout it was the Inner Circle were still kind of respectfully being the Inner Circle, and the fact that they were building up their heel personas for that moment as well, especially playing with minus one Brody Lee Jr. and stuff, and just making sure that that moment got the right selling that it needed and the right emotion as well. The whole show was just done brilliantly. An absolutely great show from top to bottom. Great emotions as well to really convey it, even with Eddie Kingston, what he was saying. And it was really poignant what he was saying, that I need to respectfully move on. But then he went back into his heel persona. But when you see, like, being the elite, with the way he was talking and held that kind of town hall meeting.
Yeah,
powerful, powerful stuff there.
He's a great orator, Eddie Kingston.
The man, he must be some underground pastor or something, because that man, he can talk. He can talk.
For sure. And say that the ending to the show was just as emotional as the beginning of it, wasn't it?
I cried throughout the entire show. I mean, it's not surprising because everyone knows that I just cry at things. But yeah, no, the actual, like, the celebration of his life, handing over that TNT championship, and I was like, no, I can't do this, I can't watch this, like, tears in my eyes and all this sort of stuff. It's throughout the entire night, it was just emotional. And yeah, like the tribute video as well, which it was really, really nice to see later on that Tony Khan had bought the rights to the music.
Nice touch.
So I mean, it's a guy throwing around his money, but for a good cause. So, but like to watch like the actual finish off, like bringing out his boots, draping the cloth over, I was just like that. It hits you. It really, really hits you as a wrestling fan. And to like see everyone that being like out there trying to hold back the tears, and like you just see Brody Lee's son in the ring, and I'm just like, oh my god, he's a child, oh no. And you're just, oh, it, as an adult, you're just like, how, as, if I'd been under that mask, I'd be greeting. I'd be like, yeah. Like ugly crying.
I think that's the thing we've seen. I don't want to give this too much, you know, steam, because it's something that really annoys me, but we've seen in the wake of John Huber's passing, people on social media try to use it for point scoring, going over, oh, you should have done this as a tribute, you know, that wasn't respectful, you shouldn't have done this. I just want to say to people with no anger, because I don't want to respond to hate with more anger, that take this as a time for togetherness. Look at the stories. That first night, you know, when Huber passed, wrestlers from, didn't matter what company they were from, whether it was WWE, AEW, the independent scene, all coming together and sharing stories of a man who was their friend, you know. And don't mistake someone not getting a push for someone not being loved or liked or having friends in a certain promotion. And to just sum up, I think AEW's tribute to the man was incredible. Yeah. And I don't think there was a better way that they could have done it. Rest in peace to Mr. Brody Lee. He'll live for us all. We can go and revisit his matches anytime, you know. And I hope, you know, that when the story sets on the career finally of that man, that we can view him as one of the best talents of that generation, you know. I know I'll be going back and watching some Wyatt versus Shield matches in the not too distant future. So, you know, great tribute from AEW, and rest in peace to Mr. John Huber. Across the way, you know, NXT had their year-end awards that night. Just running through a couple of these, we had event of the year was TakeOver War Games. Do we agree with that one? Recency bias, or do we think that's always the sort of, that's become their Royal Rumble, basically, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's a given.
Yeah, you can't beat War Games.
Yeah, War Games, love it. It's so good. Rivalry of the year, Kwaku, come to you for this one. What's your reaction to Adam Cole versus Pat McAfee's rivalry of the year? How has your opinion of Pat McAfee changed as this run has went on?
2020 has been such a fucked up year, so fucked up indeed, that I can't believe I'm saying this. You better shut this podcast down, because I'm going to be saying things I'm going to regret. I love Pat McAfee. I used to host a bleeding TakeOver preview show just to give people the opportunity to listen to something different apart from Pat McAfee. That's how much I hated that man. I could not stand him. He was annoying. I was just
remember
like,
that.
What?
Your re-exed team over there.
I know, I was like,
I was on that panel.
I was like, who gives this man a microphone? Who gives this man airtime? Who gives this, like, why? Why? Yeah. Why? And then now I'm just like, I can't get enough of this man. Yeah. The promos, he's amazing. The what he brings to the wrestling ring is amazing. But more for me, like, I love the whole promos, the way he builds things. It's just the little attention to detail the man has. Like when Killian Dane was getting crushed in the car door by Pete Dunne, and he just looks at Pete Dunne and goes, a little aggressive, but we'll talk about that later. Loved it. She absolute genius. Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
2020. What a year.
Little did we know, Quacker, that was part of a bigger picture. Like, little did we know.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. He was certainly a breakout star this year, but didn't win breakout star of the year. Sarah, that honour went to our own guy with the tank. It was Shotzi Blackheart. Do you agree with that one?
I mean, yeah, I would say definitely. Like, it would have been between her and Bronson Reed as being my breakouts. So, Shotzi, she's done really well to sort of come into her own this year. I would agree with that.
I'll power through the rest of these here. Tag Team of the Year, Undisputed Era. Not much you can say. Female Competitor of the Year, the Genius of the Sky, Io Shirai. Male Competitor of the Year, Adam Cole. Match of the Year, Balor versus O'Reilly at TakeOver 31.
Fair.
Yeah,
I can't wait for that rematch coming up. Mm-hmm. That'll be a really good one at New Year's Evil.
Mm-hmm.
Future Star of the Year, Austin Theory. I just want to bring this up because I've heard people in Central say in the past couple of weeks they're not big fans of The Way. I bloody love The Way. I think they're exactly what they say in the tin. They're that dorky sort of nuclear family unit that's very sort of, in a weird way, just so kooky and twisted, and they're meant to be like their kids, but they're not their kids, and I love it. I'm fascinated by it. Like, honestly, I really just look forward to seeing what they do every week, because it's such a weird dynamic.
Jury's still out there for me, because I'm not gonna lie, I've not really been bought into the Garganos as heels, I'll be honest.
I've loved them as heels.
Right.
Like, utterly, I didn't like Candice LeRae. I said this the last couple of years, I thought she was boring. Like, really boring. Like, and I was like, I really don't get it.
Yeah.
See, when she turned heel, I was like, where has this been? Like, she's great. Like, she's one of the best promo people in NXT. Honest to goodness, I love
her. Give you that, yes. Mm-hmm. However, the thing I'm trying to stay away from is you're comparing it from this now to, as you were saying, there was no substance or anything to it. But at the moment, the only time I liked Gargano as a heel was when KO was hosting the KO show, and the whole thing of, oh, don't say his name, he's probably in the back asking for his music to be played, and I just love that whole thing. And then end up William Regal saying player. Brilliant. But yeah, other than that, I'm not really bought into the Garganos as heels, I'll be honest.
Fair enough. Well, let us know what you think on social media. What's your opinion on the way the Garganos is heels? Are you with it?
Love Pat McAfee. My mind will change by the time this goes out anyway. So,
and then to round us off, we had overall competitor of the year. Sarah, can't argue with you, should I?
Absolutely not.
I can. It should have been Pat McAfee.
Right, okay, but you get Pat McAfee to, you know, jump off War Games inside of a bin, and then we'll talk. Like, I know he started off doing a match with the moonsault and everything. Yeah. Io Shirai jumped off a fucking cage inside of a bin.
Pat McAfee the next day was hosting his podcast show, which has nothing to do with wrestling, and still selling the War Games match by wearing that neck brace. That is dedication, and you can't beat that. I'm sorry.
Quacky, see, if we're going in kayfabe alone, Pat McAfee hasn't won this year. Io Shirai has beaten Charlotte Flair, Rhea Ripley, and Sasha Banks this year. Like,
but
just to name a few.
But the neck brace.
But everything, but the neck brace. Forget everything. He had a neck brace.
The neck brace. Well, we're going from this to maybe one of the best TV shows that WWE's put on this year. This was a pay-per-view worthy SmackDown. You know, this was utterly unreal. We had a Kwaku kicking us off, a Universal Title cage match, Roman Reigns versus Kevin Owens. Were you a fan of this encounter here?
Yes, Jey Uso. Just the whole head of the table pack, the way they've repackaged Roman has been absolutely phenomenal, and the work that he and Paul Heyman does. And what I like about Paul Heyman this time around, because it could be easy for him to go down the realms of the way he manages Brock Lesnar, but what I like about this way of Paul Heyman, he's a bit more standoffish in the fact that he's focused on looking at Roman to see what are you going to do about this, what do you think about this, like leaving it more on Roman to do this talking, although he's not talking, instead of Paul doing the talking and stuff. So it's a weird way that Paul can sell it more with his face alone and not do the talking, which he's always been used to with Brock Lesnar. It's a completely different dynamic, but it works.
I have to say that I like it, because sometimes he almost seems more trepidatious around Roman as well.
Yeah.
You know, he seems more scared. Like, I was watching the segment where he was with Brock, and Brock's annoyed at him for not telling him Money in the Bank. He had a year to cash in. Like, do you remember that one?
Yeah.
And he's feel like you're slapping him. I've got a year. And he's like, a year? How did you not know? And it's like, the thing with Heyman with Brock was they were that close that he never really feared Brock turning on him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he knew that they were friends. With Roman, it feels more like this is Heyman's last chance. You know,
it could be another dimension of the fact that Heyman spent years telling people how dangerous Brock is, and he's seen it for himself how dangerous Brock can be, but yet Roman has beaten Brock a few times. So if this, I mean, it's kind of like saying, oh, this gun is dangerous, and then a bazooka comes in, and then all of a sudden you're managing the bazooka, you're going to be a bit,
there's always a bigger fish, as they say. You know,
I mean, a fish is more peaceful than a gun and a bazooka. So for that one, there's me, the warmonger, going about.
Give a man a fish, he'll eat for the day. Give him a gun. But Sarah, what do you think then? It looks like Kevin Owens and Jey Uso are going to move on to a feud, you know, independent of the Universal title scene, independent of Roman Reigns a bit. Do you think this will produce some good matches between Owens and Jey going forward, won't it?
I mean, I would hope so. Like, the past rivalry that he had with Roman, it always made me weird. It always weirded me out because it was just Kevin Owens falling into the same traps each and every week. And it was kind of stupid, in my opinion, because Kevin Owens is usually smarter than that. He's usually the one doing that sort of stuff. But Jey has been, like, a very, very surprising breakout talent, just on his own. Like, we always knew he was really, really good. So I can't see anything going wrong with Kevin Owens going forward. I would just hope that they need to make sure that it doesn't continually make everything look stupid at the same time.
Aye, so we moved on. The cage match was 2 weeks ago, and then we had this segment this week where it became clear that Owens would be facing Jey going forward. But within Kwaku, we had the first week of Big E as Intercontinental Champion. He was meant to be facing King Corbin. However, that match was cut short. Your usual shenanigans turns into a tag team match. Becomes Sami Zayn and Baron Corbin versus Big E and Apollo Crews. And it looks like E versus Crews will be planned for next week in the aftermath of it. It seems to try and get E over that they have given him the John Cena treatment almost. You know, it looks like they're going to have him in good matches every week, beating the odds every week, taking on all comers. Do you think this is a good way to try and get, you know, him over as Intercontinental Champion?
Jury's out for me on that front. I hope this is my objective for this one is I do believe Big E is a main card prospect. I do hope he gets a crack at the Universal Championship. Not just a crack at it, but yeah, I can see Universal Big E, if you want to go that way. See it. Yes, jury's out for me on that with the way he's being booked at the moment, but I hope that seeing the fact that that was the highest rated weekly show of 2020 in WWE, him closing it out, the way social media went, I hope this is where I say to WWE, excuse my French, don't fuck it up.
Yeah, for sure. Someone they did mess up was Billy Kay, the last news we're going to take from SmackDown, but you know, I've really liked what she's done solo. The resume thing has been golden. And this week she played manager to both the Riot Squad and Tamina and Natalya in the same match. And I don't think there's anything more ingenious than doubling your odds than that. She said in the bump, they asked if you spoke to the Riot Squad, she's like, have I sent several text messages? The answer would be yes. Have they responded to any of those several text messages? The answer would be no. So she seems to be wanting to manage the Riots. Sarah, what do you think about this Billy Kay character, the way she's went? Where do you think it's leading? And are you just happy to see it on TV every week?
I mean, you can't go wrong with seeing Billy Kay on TV each week because she's just naturally funny.
Yeah.
Like, it's just reactions, like the, no! Like, or you've got to be joking me. Like, it's small things like that. But the going around with the whole CV, it is amazing, considering that, they split up the Iconics, which I'm still quite mad at. Like, I'm still very upset about.
I'll never not be mad.
I'll never not be mad at it. No. But they need something to do, but you can not have Billie Kay doing stuff like this. I mean, if she's not going to be wrestling, have her on TV as a manager, have her as a commentator, have her doing something. Hell, even be SmackDown general manager. Give her something.
Yes.
Like, give her something. Like, imagine, like, I don't think, like, the last time we saw someone try to be a manager to two opposing teams at the same time. Like, I mean, I know Tamina even told her to be quiet. It's like, Tamina, how fucking dare you?
I'm a big fan of Tamina, but that was over.
That was not on. But no, nothing but praise for Billie Kay. I would love to see her do more things like that. Because let's just face it, her on the microphone, you're gonna be getting money regardless. Like, she is money when she's got that microphone in her hand.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And moving on to something that isn't money, WWE wished it was Raw Legends Night. Let's start off positive. Paki, what was your favorite appearance from a Raw Legend on Legends Night? Surely you know it's the Mac Militant coming to get it on.
Oh, sorry. Huh. I was so excited about that. And then I was just like, what did I just watch when I got like an hour in? I even forgot. But thank you very much for reminding me, because oh my god. See the whole start of it with the correct and then incorrect. I did like that kind of whole aspect. However, I'm sorry, but it further highlighted to me, and it's something I've heard on the show, Morrison is boring. I'm sorry.
Cracky, we're trying to start off positive.
I know, but he is. He is. And his jacket looks weird. But then when... You know it's a Mac Militant. Come on and get it all. Oh, sorry, I should stop singing. So, my man Teddy Longtime came out. Because you know I love a bit of Teddy. Comes out and he says, it seems the two of you need to wrestle against The Undertaker. And then Adam guy that Drew McIntyre.
Pierce.
Yeah,
Adam Pierce.
I just see him like community Pierce with Jackson. It's like Pierce.
Yeah. So Adam McPierce fart comes out and kind of whispers in his ear. I'm assuming saying The Undertaker's kind of retired now. So Teddy Long goes back into his general manager rule book and says, Undertaker not there. Tag team match! Yes!
Yeah. Love it. And it wasn't the only positive thing on Raw. I knew Gracky would love Teddy Long being back, but seeing it was a belter of a main event. WWE title match, Drew McIntyre versus who's he? There's that champ ass C, Keith Lee. It was really, really good stuff there.
I mean, I haven't personally watched the match. The idea of Legends Night really didn't appeal to me. Especially when I found out there was no Carlito, I was like, nah, that's it, fuck this. It's like, no Carlito, no Sarah, absolutely not. So, but I have like seen like little just like gifs and everything that you see on Twitter. Like obviously the lovely Spanish fly. You know, you can't go wrong with a Spanish fly, especially when you're Keith Lee. But it's just like, again, the small things, the whole after the match.
And we're gonna get into that.
Yeah. You can just tell the
because like the uncle who's banned from family parties for drinking too much, but always seems to show up in a cab at the wrong time when everyone's leaving at the end of the night. Uncle Bill Goldberg came out, cut a promo on how Drew McIntyre, possibly a champion, I would say, who's been too respectful to everyone he's come up against, is disrespectful to legends. And he then said something like, don't think I'm here to challenge you, but I'm here to challenge you for the WWE title at the Royal Rumble. Like, I think I heard it, you know, I was trying to go to sleep, and I just heard the collective sigh of several million wrestling fans as their hope not to see Bill Goldberg again suddenly went away. Sarah, hopefully this is the last we see of Bill Goldberg this year when Drew McIntyre beats him for the WWE title.
I mean, let's hope that this is like a very quick squash match and that they're not going to do Drew a dirty like they did The Fiend or Bray Wyatt. Like, let's just hope that they don't do it like that. Because let's just face it, we know that Bill Goldberg has passed it. We all know it. And we don't know who keeps asking for him to come back to WWE TV, let alone have a title.
Pritchard
can go fuck himself. Right? No, like, we don't want to see it. It's like, we don't want this. But yeah, let's just hope. We did make a joke in the group chat saying that we hope that this is going to be very, very quick so that the Rumble match is going to have longer. But if I see Bill Goldberg coming to the Rumble after he's lost, I will rage. And I hope that Keith Lee just, you know, punts him out the ring.
The women's, imagine when the women's Rumble, imagine Goldberg shows up.
We've got a better chance of Santina coming back and challenging Drew. I mean, that
I love it, Beth.
I would not
well.
Be mad at that.
Sarah, one can dream.
I mean, if I could get Carlito, why the hell could you not get Santino Marella? Why can you not get Santino?
Quacku, we've seen Ali cut this promo on Raw Talk where he was like, these guys have paved the road. When are you going to let me run on the road? Does that phrase sum up everything that was wrong with not only Goldberg's appearance, but the farce that was Legends Night as a whole?
Yeah. I mean, I read somewhere that what was meant to... I don't know how true this is, but if it is, let's hypothetically say this is true.
Right.
What was meant to happen was, after the match, Drew was meant to cut a promo disrespecting the Legends up the top. However, Raw had run out of time and they had to cut off the time for 11 o'clock. So there wasn't time for the promo, so they just played Goldberg's music. Goldberg comes out and he still cuts the promo as if Drew had done that promo on the Legends. So when he says you've been disrespecting Legends, the last time we saw Drew with the Legends was he was doing the whole Hulk Hogan brother vitamins and all that kind of stuff.
Being very nice to them.
And being very respectful. So I was just like, what?
But the thing is, why would you have Drew, who's meant to be your babyface champion, like cut a heel promo on Jeff Jarrett? It makes no sense to me.
Because
Jeff's done nothing wrong. Jeff's a very good feature panelist, in my opinion. Like, I don't understand.
I love Jeff Jarrett.
I do
like the memes going about when Drew said fighting you will be like fighting my dad, and you're gonna see the comparison between Drew's dad and Goldberg, the fact they both have the same beard and the same head type.
I wish someone would put George Miz in where Goldberg is.
Oh, someone's already on that, I'm sure.
You fight like Miz's dad.
Miz's dad.
Is there any way Goldberg wins at Rumble?
Oh, he's gonna win it, you watch.
No.
It's gonna happen. I'm sorry. Like, I've learned from 2020, just say it and accept it, and it won't be as bad when it actually happens.
I can
that
imagine.
If
that happens, I think everyone will turn off the Rumble.
You watch.
I'll genuinely start watching New Japan only.
If Goldberg, how about you transition and watch Impact and AEW every week?
I'll say this, if Goldberg beats Drew at the Rumble, I will start just covering the other stuff for Stephen. You hear this here now, so it won't come as a surprise to you. You can't be upset with me because you've got plenty of warning. I won't be covering WWE stuff if Bill Goldberg, the fucking old man.
This is your final appearance on WWE related stuff then? It's good knowing you, David.
Could be.
I've still got a couple of weeks until the end of the month. Like,
I won't have it. Like,
I hope they don't if they do Drew dirty like that after he's basically carried the company through the COVID era, then there's genuinely something wrong.
I don't think Alan would cope with it. I genuinely think Alan may look as
no,
a gasket.
I think Alan would. I think he would actually smash his TV.
Yeah,
and probably cry for a
he's
long time.
He's the biggest Drew fan in the show, I'd say.
We'd all be raging, obviously. We'd all be raging.
Well, we're ending this show angry, because that's what we want to do. So if you're angry too, and you don't want to see Goldberg win at the Royal Rumble, then you tweet us being angry, all right? You tweet us being angry, and we can all be angry together. I want to thank Sarah. Was this a fun show back?
Oh, it was a great show to, you know, get back into the swing of things. It's my first ever Central as well, which is quite weird.
Yeah. Did you like it?
I loved it.
It's good. It's nice and cosy in here, you know, good cushions.
It is nice and cosy.
Kwaku, did you have a fun time today talking all the things?
Oh, I did. I always have fun. Fun's good.
Yeah, that's good. Well, guys, we're going to round it off there. Don't forget to check out back catalogue, check out everything. Features Central from me. It's goodbye from the team. Goodbye. And from Santana. Goodbye.
There now follows an enthusiastic advertisement for Quiz Showdown. Hello guys, welcome to Quiz Showdown. I'm Daniel Campbell, and in this show you're going to see the members of the Eat Sleep Suplex Retweet team go through a very strange quiz. We don't know what the heck's going on with it, but you're going to have to watch to find out. Go check out on the YouTube channel now. That was an enthusiastic advert for Quiz Showdown.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.